Everything exists simply by definition for the Mormons. Now, missionary Baptists are not guilty of that, are you? One extreme was one time when I baptized a young man. His Campbellite father was standing by a missionary Baptist deacon over against the fence at this cow pond where I baptized the boy. It's back in 1952. That Campbellite father, this boy, when I raised him up out of the water, he said, "Thank God, now my boy is saved." This old missionary Baptist deacon, Andrew Nutt, said to him that if your boy weren't saved before he went down into that at their water, apt as not, he ain't saved now. The Campbellite said, "What do you mean? The scripture says he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." Now he's baptized, already professed that he believed on the Lord Jesus Christ. Now he's saved. Says, "What do you mean the water didn't do any good, the baptism didn't do any good?" Andrew answered him like this: "I don't know, but that ain't the way it is." Missionary Baptists aren't guilty of it. Everything exists simply by definition. Are we? How many people, missionary Baptists, can even prove the doctrine eternal security? They got the definition. They know what eternal security means, but that's all it means to most of them. How many of them know what poor pit affiliation is by name? Nearly every one. But why are we so dead set against poor pit affiliation? They don't know. Every one of them tell you that we don't believe in an invisible or universal church. But you ask them how it is that we don't believe in it, and all they've got is the definition. We've got as ignorant of people as the Mormons have, basically. That's poor English, isn't it? But we've got as ignorant of people as the Mormons have, basically. That's true. Every one of them can tell you when the rapture is going to take place, but can't explain eternal security. In fact, the rapture is just a defiant statement, too, in most cases. To the Mormons, matter is eternal. Matter is eternal. A given, not something created. Not some creature, it's a given thing. They believe that their prosperity, their wealth is an eternal thing that God has given them. God gave them controlling interest the other day of the Los Angeles Times. God given. Why not invest on things of the earth because they're God given and therefore eternal? Missionary Baptists don't believe that, though, do we? But we practice it. Don't believe it at all, but we practice it. I have been in the church at Anaheim that can't seemingly get enough money. They can't get enough property. That's an interesting thing, too, of course. It's not their God.
You mean personally or for the church?
For themselves, personally. They just can't get enough. Right now, I'm having to battle down an idea of buying an acre of ground at Big Bear and putting a lodge up there to lease out and have when we want to use. We lease a lodge every year at Thanksgiving. Go up, have a good fellowship. Lady wanted to sell it, $130,000. Bad shape. Said she'd fix it up. But we can buy and build over Big Bear for half that amount. Better facilities than she's got. So, let's do it. Let's do that. Let's get it going. All right, I'm having to see. All right, let's push the thing around. Of course, the church won't object to us here at Anaheim having services for the glorification of God, and at the same time be collecting rent from that lodge up there on Sunday from a non-Christian group. Wither looked at me and he said, "Now, you didn't have to say that." I said, "Yes, I did. Had to say it. Surely we wouldn't object to that." Well, he said, "Now, you build it, you buy a house, you're making a payment on it, you're paying the payment on that house while you're in church. The payment doesn't cease on Sunday. It still accumulates monthly. So you have 4 or 5 service days." And, sure do, don't you? Church don't object to that, so it shouldn't object to the lodge being built. So I'll think about this tonight. So go ahead, meantime, sell your damnable property. Get rid of it. Get completely helpless so God can be glorified. That's my preaching. I believe it and shall stand behind it. I fought my wife all these years doing it, but she's still got to go that way. I can't. It goes against my digestible. Can't go any other way. Just can't do it. No way. I had the other. When I surrendered to God, I gave that up. That's it. Never have had any desire. So maybe I'm to have an advantage on others because maybe they're never young enough when they enter the ministry, they never did have, you know, anything. And or handicapped in that respect a little. Maybe have the edge. But I am just as dead set against God's people owning anything, yea, even a church building. I just don't. The Lord's church went to the synagogue, didn't it? It went to the public places of worship. They did this all the time. They got run out everywhere, but they went everywhere preaching the gospel. I think we're just pretty well like a bunch of eaglets like that nest. We're going to stay there as long as the dawn holds out and we can't feel any discomfort. Stay right there. And start buying property. Why? Saying, "I shall not be moved." We'll stay here permanently. And turn around and look at a house that God gave me this house. Isn't he wonderful? Isn't he wonderful? Brother Elaine the other night said, "God provided for me a new car since I've been on the mission field down there at San Diego." They forgot to make the payments on it. It kind of grinned, you know. That's the same way he provides for all, but they just won't admit it. Lost men that bought cars the same day under the same contract. God provide them. If not, he shows a respect for persons. So There's lots of ways you kind of look at it, but in our practice, we just about as corrupt as a Mormon. Preach one thing and practice another. That is hypocrisy. I think the Apostle Peter should have taught us a lesson there. He left his boat and followed Jesus, but he somehow or another still retained that thing and was able to go back to it. My son-in-law got all religion up there one time and put his television in the clothes closet. He and my daughter missed the kids one Sunday. This was before they started the kindergarten. The other one was still younger. Couldn't find them one Sunday afternoon. Went into the kids' bedroom and they saw an extension cord and a wall running under the closet door. They opened the door and the kids in there watching a cartoon, having a good time. Just giggling. They had a good time. What kind of lesson did he learn? I just took it from my living room. I'm a hypocrite, in other words. I didn't destroy the damn thing. I put it in the closet. So when this case of religion wears off, and if I want to bring it back into the living room, I can, you see. We're better than the Mormons, though, aren't we? Surely we are. I mean, that's it.
I was praying for a long time for my TV to go out, and because I knew we didn't have enough money to fix it to be there. And when I went to Israel, we hadn't had a TV for about 9 months or something like that, and it wasn't working at all. When I went to Israel, while I was gone, my wife had it fixed.
You still retained it, so.
Yeah, it was a nice piece of furniture.
Yeah.
And I said, it's all right, Senator. I'm not going to fix it anyway.
That's the way it goes. Walter Lovelady was holding a revival in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. The pastor and the evangelical singer and Walter went fishing one afternoon. They was catching crappie. Walter's fishing. And so King time in the afternoon, 3:30, when everybody on the job everywhere had pledged that they would have a simultaneous prayer. Everybody just stopped whatever they were doing during this week of revival. They're going to stop, do whatever they're doing, bow and have momentary prayer, you know, for the revival. So the pastor of the church looked at his watch and said, "Brethren, it's 3:30. Let's pray." So they laid their poles down on the side of the boat that's out in the water. While they're praying, a big commotion took place. They got through praying, looked up, and old Walter was pulling in a big crappie. The pastor said to him, said, "Walter, I thought we supposed to been praying." He said, "I was, but said, I didn't take my hand off my pole, and I felt that and hit." He said, "I just had to pull him." He said, "Ain't he a dandy?" I said, "Good as any." Well, he laid his pole down, but he didn't take his hand off of it. You know, it still had some attachment to it. That's kind of the way we are. We'll refrain from the world's activities, but still touch it just enough to have some drawing power to it. We don't want to leave it completely, sever ourselves completely from it. And that's kind of, we practice what the Mormons believe, which we don't believe. You know, that's bad, anyway, bad. The church at Laodicea heard the Lord say, "You're rich, you have need of nothing. You're rich with much goods, you have need of nothing. Know you not that you're poor and naked and wretched." They had laid claim upon the material substance so much that it's just kind of like the housing bit, real estate now. I still quiver for our church members that just keep on selling and buying more expensive houses. They pocket themselves $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, $20,000, but they reinvest back into more profit, more property. And it's getting now to where some of their payments up around $500 a month for their houses. And they're just all they can do to make their payments, it seems. But they still have some of that profit left that they dig into. In other words, it's not going to amount to anything unless they, if they would have sold, they would have invested their money into something. I say like church bonds. A lot of our churches selling bonds, it pays a pretty good interest. Pretty good interest. Safe anyhow. It's usable. Can be. But they put it into more property. And then you hear the news on the economy of our nation, how it's pressing hard on the devaluation of the dollar. Just keep pressing and dipping it and dipping it. Stocks 5 years ago that were in the 75 bracket are down in the 30 brackets now. All stocks. I mean, it just keeps on dipping our dollar from an economical standpoint. There has to be a back breaking somewhere. It just cannot continue. Well, what it is that every person in the United States is just inheriting more and more debt all the time. It's just more debt per person. And that just makes the dollar lopsided. It can't hold out. It's going to burst it. There's no way to figure it. The computer just belts the information back. Hey, won't even fool with it. It's no way to figure it. And so, if our church members are caught up into this, they're going to hurt just like the rest of the nation. And so, it makes it bad on all, everybody. Our folks wanted to sell our parsonage. Sell it for $60,000 now. And they only owe 10 more years of $215 a month payment, you know. The payment's real reasonable, you see. It's very cheap, very inexpensive. And but look at the amount of thousands of dollars that they, $30,000, $40,000 they could clear. And put that on the building fund, they said. You know. And buy another, put $10,000 down on another house, still have $30,000 on the building fund, you see. Really? Amount to something. Yeah, but that house you paid $10,000 down on would cost you not less than $450 a month payments, you see. And when the fall does come, and it has to come, no economy has ever held out. They're designed to spin out sometime. It just cannot keep soaring. It just has to spin itself out, run its course, and it dwindles down. Everybody knows this. That isn't anything new. But it's a gamble on when it's coming. I'll get in more. I'll sell before that comes. My boss one time told about buying a train load of corn in Kansas. He borrowed $50,000 to buy that train load of corn. And out of the whole train load, he could make a nickel a pound, which would be a young fortune, and turn it over the next day. That's what he had, just borrowed the $50,000 for a couple of days. Be almost less, no interest at all, you see. And so this banker let him have it. That was in 1922. Right after World War I, he said that train load of corn never did move. Train didn't even pull it. The thing dropped. Boom. He owed $50,000. Couldn't even give the corn away. Nobody had the power to Another company had it sealed, and the boxcar doors were sealed in his name, and he gave the authority to open those seals to the company that allegedly bought it, and there it was. Railroad company trying to sue him to get his corn out of there. And he wound up, had to borrow some more money to hire people to unload the corn and pile it on the ground. There was no market for it, just gone. That things like that happen, you know, it just, boom, that's one man, you know. Just one little old knothead man. When you get a nation of small businesses, which reach up into the hundreds of thousands and possibly millions, you can see how it would just completely deteriorate that economy I'm talking about. Just spin out, burn up. Be like a star falling. They burn out before they hit the earth. You see them soar across the sky, and directly they just fade out. It's kind of like the economy. Bright when it starts all, but it runs its course.
Look, my stock market fall in 1929 and 30. How long did that last?
The World War II had to be created in order for the world banking system to overcome that.
That's how they'll get over the next.
Yeah.
After, save the world for an economy of
yes,
war.
Sir. So, but
look how well we did during
that does not keep people from losing out. It isn't a salvation of the people, but it's a salvation of the economy of a nation. And then the people have to go back to government jobs again and government promotions. Then they eventually get to branching out into their own little resources, everything, and build up a nation again. That's where it goes, but I'm sure that one of these days, boy, it's going to be a sad thing to be in debt to the government, the FHA, or things of this nature. It's going to be a mighty sad thing. I really do. I believe that's so strong that I just don't intend to get involved. Just don't intend to. The loss is such that it's absolutely devastating to the subjects. It warps them somehow. And it wouldn't do it if we weren't bound to the things of the world. Wouldn't have a way of warping. I think we ought to be freed and clear. Creation is really the wrong word for modernism. Perhaps organization would better describe God's relationship with the universe. Organization, organizing it into benefit for man. For man's pleasure, for man's use, for man's capital. He did not make it. Rather, he simply took what existed in a raw state and organized it somewhat seriously. According to the Doctrine and Covenants, quote, all spirit is matter, end quote, and consequently, is dependent upon, or is dependent on matter. This also has its hang up with us. Really has its hang up with us. You hear this so common, preachers. God gave us this property, and they'll have their people believe that you're not God's. We ask you to give us money to help build our church building on it. God has done this. Now we ask you for this. We're just as hep on this deal as the Mormons are, but only in practice. We don't believe it, see. Yeah, I think God's provisions. I think I'll stand before Christ here. God's provisions to the church are restricted to spiritualism and not materialism. I'll have to give an account of this if it's wrong. I see the Jehovah's Witness building. Same kind of spray for their crop to kill off the insects. Use same kind of loans to make the crop pay back the same kind of debts at the end of the gathering, the harvest time. Sell the same kind of grapes to the same winery. Saved and lost alike do this. And the same money is just as taxable for one as is the other. Lord Jesus Christ proved you paid taxes on that which was Caesar's. But he also proved that you give to God that which is God's. And he didn't get money out of the fish's mouth to give to God. He got it out of the fish's mouth to give to Caesar. Monetary things are the necessities for the material things that we have deemed necessary to promote the cause of Christ. God never laid down one blueprint for a church building, never suggested we should have them. And consequently, I'm a firm believer he has never led in them. I find him obligating himself to lead us in all truths. Well, you don't spell building by spelling truth. Truth is not made subject to the planning commission of a city. You don't have to buy a permit to validate truth. You do obligate yourself to the planning commission of a city, and you do have to buy a permit to build a building according to the city's specification and make it valid. Honestly, if we mix these things, we practice no better than the Mormons' doctrine. We practice no better than the Mormon's doctrine. 17th chapter of John, he said, you or they are in the world, but they are not of the world. The world cannot know them. And the world shows as much respect for missionary Baptist church building, the same kind of respect for that church building as our people show to God from a spiritual standpoint. So, there you have my sentiments. Not worth anything. You won't use them, but that is. I don't use them, so why should you? Caught up in the same dilemma. Just try to keep the record straight and let them know where we are, and then if we go on, they're doing it willfully. So I don't even enjoy a nice church building. We had burned out and met back down a little old fellowship hall. I enjoyed the services back then, that little old thing. You can rent those all year long for not over $300 a month. $3,600 a year for rent for church services? Yeah, we don't have any Sunday school classes. Well, wasn't it Paul that wrote you must segregate your audience into age groups and promote the Sunday school in order to grow for Jesus' sake? You know, who said that?
I met a barber down here in Bellflower who belongs to a religious group. I don't have any idea what they are. They believe very strongly in the fact that the church, you know, the people, should not own church property, that you meet in each other's houses from one Sunday to the next, that you don't have a paid ministry, that you support your ministry by feeding them and putting them up as they travel around.
Every church I've accepted, I've asked them not to pay me a salary, and I haven't got it yet. They're scared. They're afraid. Afraid. So not to pay me a salary, just put it in a box, and I'll take out what I have to have to live on. Leave the rest in there. Just put it in the box. And every time I want to give me a raise, I beg them not to, because I'm just as subject as I can be to obligate myself within the last dime of what they give me. I'm just as subject to that as a man. I guess I'm supposed to do it that way. I don't know. I do. And so it just gets me more obligated. The more they give me, the more I get obligated. And so, but I never have gotten the church to give me just a free will offering. They won't do it. But that wasn't what I got up here to put on the board. Now I forgot.
He got up while I was talking about that barber down there.
Going from house to house, or what?
Not owning property or building. Oh, yeah, this is what I got up to. This is profound, boy. Put this word on the board. You can preach to our own preachers what we have been talking about, that we should not own property. The Bible doesn't give it. Everyone justifies it with this word. I know, but. And go ahead with a handful of qualifications then. Every kind. This city makes us have, we can't have public assemblies. Brother, what do you think they were unable to do in the catacombs and cave? They weren't able to have public assemblies there, were they? But we praise our forefathers, don't we? For the faith they showed, and we eliminate ourselves from being able to practice the same kind of faith. Eliminated by probably joined them. Can't lick them with joint. So got right in with every kind of Protestant that looked upon them. You got probably to your church, aren't you? Yeah, we were organized. You are. We planned. That is an organization day. Yeah, so when we were organized. And all this stuff, yeah, just like the rest of the world, in organization and in planning. And some of our churches even plan a church budget for the year. Sit down and get the deacon to try to plan that budget out so we know exactly how much we're going to have, you know. Some of them put in a bulletin the budget for the month, $4,000 every week. Every week they deduct what they had that Sunday for offering. They got first Sunday, got that, and our need then. Our need is $3,000 through the rest of this month. That'll be in the bulletin, stacked up like that, you know. The next month, they got $600. And, boy, then they'll say, well, we didn't get our budget. We showed a deficit there. Won't work out over the 4 Sundays with 600. So we got 2,400 more need. And then they'll have out here and only 2 more weeks to get it. You know, only 2 more weeks, you know. To keep people reminded of this thing all the time, that budget, that budget.
Well, I've never seen that.
You see, oh, many of our churches do this. It's commonly practiced. And then you ask, why do you plan a budget? Well, Paul said, let everything be done decently and in order. You're indecent if you don't plan a budget and very much out of order. Disorderly. That's the way they implicate that you are, you know. So now you have a lot of this that comes from organization. Organization. And organization of a church must be kept in mind that it's restricted to the system of doctrine, the faith, organizing in it what we believe and intend to practice from a spiritual standpoint. The how to buy property and the building and things of that nature, if they are not involved in the organization. So why does an organized church have to be properly organized in the faith and everything like we always do? Why then does that organized church have to get involved in so much other stuff? We do. We have to, seem like, is the but. But others do it. Yes, sir.
We can't even get involved until we become incorporated.
Right. We have to go incorporate then. Yeah.
Glad you brought that. Yeah.
Ain't on anything. And so.
Tied up.
You're less than nothing if you don't incorporate. So, it's kind of a mess, any way to look at it. But the Mormons are bold. They laid right down in print, say, we've incorporated this. And we practiced it, but hadn't incorporated it. Well, really, we cooperated it, but we dare not tie it to the church, to this or something else.
What would you do in this present age to follow exactly what you believed if you were determined to do that?
We would be in the exact same shape that the early churches were. We'd have to drift from place to place, run out here, assemble over there, be run out there when the centurions found us.
Well, where would we park our cars?
Yeah.
Where would we meet?
Yeah. Just where we could. That's the way they did. And we did this. We'd meet in colonies, you know, and in clans until the government would, in nearly every case, when the Catholic would come in and get into the state. That's where the trouble would come on these colonies.
I see several early churches that had a settled meeting place. The church
was
in so-and-so's house.
Yeah, in their house.
Don't see anything wrong, and they owned their house.
They was in their house, sure.
Yeah, the church didn't own the house. The
members did.
They said, you know, that any children of God should own property, right?
The thing of what I was getting at is we might go in debt. Go in debt and obligate ourselves to the government or whoever's financing. If one has it, if he has it, church drew the first church, sold it, gave it to the church. But Paul speaks of these all the way through in so and so's house. Many of those houses are just airship, and that's about the only way they have. You know, it came down to the families, and it was theirs, not even by their earnings. They were saved and added to the Lord's church, and still had their houses. They had their house. But in our day and age, we never do own them, really. Never do own them. It's, the freeway can come in and take your property. It's just, it's nothing to it. Nothing to it. And in that day, they were free in their own house to do what they wanted. They could have church service. Today, you can't have it in your house. In the cities, they'll run you out. And if you have 12, you're violating the fire marshal law, and then close you out, make you stop. Yes, sir.
You're saying that we don't own it. Boy, that's the truth. The fact that you had your house paid for, don't pay the taxes, you see what happens to it. You'll take it back as it belongs.
Well, they would there. They would there. They keep the taxes paid. And the Lord showed a difference in paying taxes. He wasn't dishonest. He paid taxes. He paid taxes because of either your existence or your property that you own. That's for sure. But today, you don't own it. It's just an involvement. It's an involvement. And it gets beyond what you can reach. And man has to work himself to death to make payments. Keeps everybody half dead, doesn't it? You want to sleep, can't sleep. Want to study, and you have to go to sleep while you're trying to study. It's just keeps the body sapped, run down.
The alternative is rent, which is even more of an involvement. I mean, it's more of a monetary drain.
Yeah. Thing of it is, though, church gets settled in one spot. It won't travel. Won't go. People have cars that go to church from great distances. Look at the thousands that passed by going from where they live to church. They never know whether they're saved or lost. Or, don't know who they are. Traveling. We have a different environment, but down through the years, the dark ages, they'd buy colonies, they'd bought land and everything, but it was theirs. It was theirs. They'd worship and get run out. Lose it all. It taught us enough, looked like. But you can rent a theater building, ample seats. And you can rent sometimes City Hall. You can rent union buildings. And, I'm personally guilty of our $1,520 a month property fund payment. And our missionaries get $850 a month. We don't give but just about enough money to support one missionary in all our mission endeavors and Christian education thrown in. About enough one missionary on the field. And we rented a building for $700 a month. We could pay another missionary salary. And I got more confidence in one missionary doing mission work than I have our church and what it's doing. And, in the name of the Lord, really. One missionary do more work than our whole church is doing. Mission field. According to their reports, they baptize more. More is added to the work. Get more professional faith than our church gets. And honestly, I believe it's because we just stalemated. But it happens a lot. As happy and contented as they be. But I ain't. I tell you for sure, I can't even get a fire started in it. Burn out once or twice, but get another fire started. We're not even doing that much for the Lord. They won't burn us out anymore. You know what I said? Kind of left us alone. Something is wrong. There isn't any magic feeling of, a desire of spiritual uplifting. closeness or close fellowship or something. There's something missing. And hollow, not a real good experience. We had burned out and met out there in a little old building. Man, people were, we had shouting and weeping. Souls saved, baptismal services nearly all the time. People sat on the parking lot in chairs out there. We couldn't get but 150 in the little old fellowship hall. We never have had that good attendance since we got back into church. But we had plenty of room, you know. They tried, but there was nothing there. Singing wasn't any good. Old high building up in there, everybody could hear themselves singing. They couldn't hear anybody else, so they got quiet, you know. Old flat roof, flat ceiling building, you can hear everybody sing, you know. And you'll sing louder, because you're not too conspicuous. Sounds better. Sounds a whole lot better. Got to get them cathedral-type buildings. A lot of space, it's empty. But oh no, I felt it out everywhere in the world, and it's just material substance, just